Okay, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors, Bet Online, our exclusive wagering partner. Bet Online, of course, where you get all your action on NFL football, NBA basketball, about to get started up in the coming weeks here. And Bet Online AG is the place you want to go. More options to wager than anywhere else online. So online today, take advantage of all the great midseason bonuses, offers, and contests. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Use the code CLNS50 when you go to betonline.ag. Once again, betonline.ag, code CLNS50 to get you 50% off your initial deposit.
It's a post game.
They're back.
Syracuse is winning. Right? The Celtics are winning.
Life is winning.
Sherrod's back. Everything's okay.
The Sunday's looking good.
Everything's okay. Celtics win.
And we got trade rumors. We get to do trade rumors, baby.
You tell me which ones you want to do.
I haven't read through them yet, so we'll leave them at the end of the show.
Well, how am I supposed to know what they are then?
I'm reading through them now. They just dropped. They're hot off the presses.
Yeah, so why don't you text them to me so the host knows, then we can talk about them. Also, we can have the producer make some fancy graphics if we have to do rumors.
Yeah, but you know what that means, John. That means they're not that great. That's why.
Yeah, I know.
You know, if there were great options –
Bobby Romeo, Jose Offerman,
hey, what can we get for James Ennis from the same old song? What can he get us?
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, all of those things. So
Romeo and late first.
So I mean, look, I don't know. Good, great. What do you think? You think they got the message a little bit in terms of the ball move, like? You have these low moments, right? And this is always the – whether it's a team meeting or whatever it is. And, you know, they've hit a few rock bottom moments this year. You know, last game felt like one of them. They were really down on themselves again, saying all the right things. It's rarely resulted in action. But in this case, it looked like at least out of the jump, and I think it carried through a lot of the game, there was clearly a mindset and an emphasis on sharing the basketball. And you could see it in the first few possessions, how the touches and the passes were quick and the ball was moving. And over the course of the game, it didn't really result in much in the first quarter. But by the fourth quarter, by the third, fourth, and the three started to drop and it looked like it started to finally pay dividends. Did it look like a mindset change at all to you in terms of how they approached the start of this game?
It looked like Brad Stevens took some notes from the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And some of the teams that are moving on. I mean, that ball movement, the guys moving without the ball, not necessarily to get to spots to shoot, but just moving created so many great opportunities for them to score. It was like watching like a really like steroid-driven Pete Carroll Princeton team out there early on. Guys were just – I mean, it was great to see that. And it's frustrating because even in – with that being said, they still went through those stretches and spells where it was just bring the ball up court, jack up a three.
Yep.
Bring the ball up court, look guys off, jack up a three. It's like they're like they have this iso ball flu and they're trying to break it with a sweat and get out of that. And they're still going to have moments where they're going to revert back to that. But I thought the effort offensively was to make sure the ball was moving and guys kept moving. And defensively, it seemed like there was a lot more verbal activity than there usually is, where guys were talking and trying to be on a string defensively. But it's a good win because they needed one. But I'm not ready to stamp approval that this team has figured anything out.
Yeah. So
I'm with you. I'm with you,
Sherrod. Go ahead.
I thought they pieced it together nicely in that third quarter. Again, the same pattern we've seen throughout the course of the regular season, right? They get together, they reset at halftime, but then we don't know what's going to happen in that fourth quarter. And it's almost like I saw the story. Remember, I sent that text out. I'm like, 13, the Magic will get this down to 13 points before the fourth quarter.
They got it down to 10.
They managed to do it like 30 seconds.
It was eight.
91-83.
We got it down to 10.
Like and 3 minutes into the quarter.
Again, but again, that third quarter, they pieced it together nicely because they were moving the ball. I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. They have a double-digit lead here in this third quarter, but they're around like 11 assists. I'm like, they need to keep moving that ball. And then that's exactly what happened in that third quarter. But one thing to point out also, that great third quarter they put together, Jason Tatum went scoreless. And I don't mean that in a bad way. That's a good thing because I think Jaylen Brown got cooking. You know, they were able to help each other out. Obviously, they were playing great together as a cohesive unit, as a force from behind the arc. You know what? I predicted a lot more assists in this game, and I saw that finally in the third quarter. I also predicted a lot more threes. I just didn't think it would be those two. Right? I thought they would be the one distributing throughout the night. That's the thing here. I don't know how that bodes for the in the long run, you know. But again, like you said, a win's a win.
Yeah, no, it's, and again, the first bucket of the game, I texted you guys, you know, I was like, look at that, you know, like, boom, you know, pass, back cut, Tatum, you know, right. All alone there. It was like, okay, that was something. I tweeted right after that, this feels like one of those 30-assist games, 30-assist feel-good, make-good games, you know, where it's like, ah, that's what it looks like.
Called it.
And of course, but, you know, again, I hate doing the make miss league thing. And Sherrod, we joked about it last time. Obviously, when those threes go down, it's much easier to get assists. Like, hey, here you go, guy standing 2 feet away from me. Hit this 30-foot shot. And then they do. And you look and you get the assist. You know, like that. Those are great when they go, but they don't always go, Bobby.
Yeah, I think you hit it for the most part that it was to a large degree shots falling, especially for Brown. You're going to go out and hit 10 threes in a game. Yeah. That's always going to work. Yeah. But
that helps.
I love condensing the rotations as they have in recent weeks. And I know it hasn't worked right up until this point, but getting those five playoff starters back together, cutting off some of the minutes for the lower rotation guys like Grant, like all these guys that we've thrown around for the most part, you know, they got their little runs in this one. Neesmith got his chance in the first and second half and then obviously down the stretch. But that starting five has great cohesion. And I love them in the playoffs. You still saw Kemba struggle in the later portion of the postseason. They still were able to win in spite of that. So that's a group that has cohesion, connectivity, all that stuff. We haven't seen a ton of it this year. We haven't seen the unit play for more than 3-4 games. So I've hated that injury excuse all year, but that is a unit that brings something from last year that they had together and can carry it forward this postseason. They just don't have the depth below that. As we saw again tonight, even Rob wasn't his best. Neesmith was awful in this game, I thought. Grant was Grant. And it was basically the starters carrying this to the finish line.
Yeah, Neesmith was brutal. I mean,
So bad.
You know, there was that one play where all I could think of was walking boot or air cast for his ankles because they got broke that bad. That shouldn't happen. That just shouldn't happen, young fella. I know you're not Marcus Smart defensively, but damn, seriously?
Not only that, Sherrod, there was one play where finally. The ball got kicked to him for a wide open corner three, and it took him like 8 seconds to load that thing up. You know,
he didn't really. It was like, wait a minute, am I back at Vanderbilt? Am I screaming because they threw me the ball?
You know, and it was, and the form was like late stages Juwan Johnson bad. You know, like I was like, what are you doing?
And Jimmy was looking at him the whole time in the corner. He's just like, this is going to go to you. Get ready.
Go,
I'm making my move. Here it comes. Like, literally.
And he was like, I got it. Ooh, yeah. It was so slow.
And the defense, 4 fouls in 13 minutes. Every single time he was out there, the offense's eyes lit up, and they threw him right into that pick and roll, and he just could never handle it. Like, it's so soon. We throw out all the excuses and stuff for him that are valid. I think this is the hardest season ever, and we've seen it with a ton of rookies around the league who are struggling, and there haven't been too many standouts outside the top three, but he just doesn't look ready for this level yet.
You know what?
Or ever.
Right. We spent about, like, 90 seconds talking about Naismith, and we shouldn't. He's not worth it. He really isn't. I want to talk about Marcus Smart.
We talk a lot about Neesmith. I mean, I gotta fill you in, Sherrod. We talk a disproportionate amount about Neesmith because we're still waiting for something to happen.
And there it goes, Joe Sway.
Oh, there he goes. It just isn't happening, and we don't know why. And you want to
give Neesmith a hug right now? That's where Joe Sway went.
I can't believe he can. You're right. The reason we talk about him is it is. I can't believe how bad he is. Like, I've never seen a player look like I said. We compared him at one point to like early Avery Bradley, who was really terrified, was really afraid to put the ball on the court, just wanted to run away from any potential mistakes. And it took him a few years. I never thought watching Avery Bradley play his first season, he'd have any chance of being a professional basketball player. And he did it. So maybe Neesmith could follow that path, but man, he looks freaking terrified.
The thing that freaks me out about him is that he came into the league with a very clear skill set that this team absolutely needed to have. And that for me is the mind-blowing part about why he struggled. They need you to make shots. That's why you're a lottery pick.
I've got the particular set of skills. He's like, no.
I don't get it.
Liam Neeson. No, anyway.
comment and we'll get it.
Man, they weren't kidding about your Wi-Fi, Joe Sway. Damn, boy.
Yo, that was quick. I just trying to talk to Neesmith real quick. Like you said, man, I was just trying to, you know, try to encourage the young guy. It's a big road trip. It's a big road trip. Damn, you know.
Yeah, that per diem, you're right. That per diem is pretty big on this road trip. I hope he enjoys it.
This
yeah,
might have go been a long way. This may be the earliest we could. I mean, James Young was pretty early.
That's a comparison you think of.
Joe Forte Ooh. Was pretty early, you know, lower picks in the 20s, obviously, like Fab Mello. You know, there's a bunch of guys you grabbed and you immediately when you put them out there, you're like, no, not gonna
but
work.
This guy was a lottery pick,
huh?
Right,
lottery
but
pick.
This is a lottery pick. Forte, I think, was 13 overall, but I can't remember
technically, I guess.
Forte, that was when they had like three first round picks.
That was
Joe Johnson, Kendrick Brown, Joe Forte. I think that was that year.
Kendrick Brown, man, that dude could fly. I remember him.
He sucked, man.
That's the only thing he could do. He could fly. That's all he could do.
Yeah. I mean, I was in Detroit at that time, and when his name was like among the ones the Celtics were like the only team that was like feeling Kendrick Brown, and the rest of the league was like, you go right ahead and take that guy. We will not stand in your way all year.
That's yep. funny because like the dunk of his career was in Detroit. I remember he took off from like the free throw line, and that was yep. it. That's all you heard from him.
But
Sherrod is right twice a day.
Sherrod, we don't have to spend all this time on Neesmith. I am, you know, again, we've
John
talked
has about so much hope for him.
But you're right. I want to see Brad play him only because you got to see what you have. But I mean, it's becoming apparent. They have nothing in him, and it is depressing. You know, it's depressing. Yeah. What you wish is you do wish. Brad said it prior to the game. We talked about this. He said they asked Tatum and Brown if they want to rest all the time, and they always say no. You do wonder if there was one of those games where you had, you know, and it almost happened at that time, and then the Celtics kind of had that nobody could suit up, you know, thing during Tatum's COVID thing in the early going, so they couldn't play. But you almost wish there'd be a game or two where you could just give him 35 minutes as a starter and say your role is to score and just see if you could do it, you know?
He's an example of why the G League is so important because yes. we all know he would be 30
points. Yeah.
But see, to me, the G League is the litmus test to whether you are an NBA player or not, because James Young would go up to the G League and would be average. He would be like the fourth or fifth best player. And then you're thinking like, ooh. This is not good.
Right.
Yeah, you got a guy like Romeo who'll go up there and play like 10 minutes and have like 15 points and 7 rebounds. And almost every guy that decides exactly.
Taco was killing it.
Killing it. And you see where that's got him. He can't get on the floor. But when you're average in the G League, that means you are way, 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 way below average as an NBA player, and your lifespan in the league is going to be short. Yeah. We don't know that about Naismith. He hasn't had that opportunity. I'm curious to see what he does in the summer because, again, the competition isn't going to be nearly what he's
code.
What's that?
Learns to code. He needs a different trade.
John wants to keep all these guys.
Damn, Pat. I'd send him to coding camp or something.
Damn.
John said, get out of the career.
Next show, the only question we're going to ask is, could Aaron Neesmith start in the G League?
Oof.
I know.
I'm not giving up on young fella just yet.
Okay,
I'm not
going to give up yet. I said I wouldn't talk all game. You wanted to talk about Marcus Smart. Tell me why.
I want to talk about Marcus Smart because this felt like a game where Marcus Smart had a low-key imprint on what was happening. The ball movement that we talked about, Marcus often was the guy that was either making that pass or the hockey pass that kind of got things going. And defensively, and I talked about this earlier, there was way more chatter, it seemed, in this game than there usually is. And Marcus was kind of leading that, and other guys followed suit. I've been thinking more about how when Marcus was out, how they weren't just missing his play. They were missing his presence. They were missing that voice in their ears. And frankly, you know, and I wrote about this for Boston Sports Journal. It raised, and we talked about this the other day, about how I think there are legitimate questions about whether this team loves to win more than they hate to lose. And I thought this was a game where they went out and said, you know, we just got to – we're not going to lose this game. It wasn't – they didn't play to me as if they were thinking, well, you know, let's just try to go out here and win. They were playing like, no, we can't F around and lose this game. And they need to play more like that, because when you talk about teams that are really good, that have deep playoff runs, that's their thing. They don't care about winning. They care about not losing. I was thinking about this morning. I remember a conversation I had with Ben Wallace years ago in Detroit. And this was when Detroit was really good and the Cavaliers were the cadavers. They sucked really bad pre-LeBron. And
love that.
I remember they beat them by like 5 points. And guys in the locker room were pissed. They were upset because the game was closer than they won. And my thinking was, you won the game. What's the big deal? And they said, it's not about winning. It's about getting better and winning. And this was a step back for us. I'm like, but you won. It's still a step back, and we're pissed that we took a step back. You don't see that with the Celtics. You don't see them looking at games where they may not play their best and find a way to win, them being bothered that they didn't play their best. It's like it became, well, we're just happy to win. And that's my concern with this team going forward, that they're too locked into finding ways to, let's just win games, as opposed to being pissed that they're not playing well when they do that.
Yeah. Juan Smart, eight assists. Brown had eight assists since February 21st. Tatum had eight assists since February 11th. They need a passing game like that from somebody. And that was going to be the biggest thing for him coming back, was spreading the ball out to everybody. And I think almost all the starters got involved here. Tice was great. Brown, Tice was Tatum.
Awesome. Yeah. I thought he was awesome.
So that's what having a point guard does. And Smart's just such a great point guard. We always overlook that attribute in his game. He's the best passer on this team.
Yeah, he's the only passer on this team. So, I mean, he has to be out there. He's the only one who's looking for people and looking to distribute first, you know?
And it's contagious. I think it's contagious. Because the way that they were moving without the ball today, I mean, it was – I mean, for those of us who love, like, college basketball, I do love college basketball. I love when guys are just moving. Like Loyola Chicago, when they beat Illinois, I mean, if you had a chance to watch any bits of that game, my God, they put on a clinic on ball movement.
Princeton, Georgetown, baby. That's what we want to see.
Exactly. But you know what? But we got better athletes in the NBA, so you can have the best of both worlds. You can still have that, and you can have guys knocking down shots on transition.
Well, it's not college basketball. It's just basketball, you know?
Like, that's true.
Making the right play.
That's what you have to do. You have to get back to the basics, right? Yeah. You have to get back to what's going to overall make this team better. Yeah, I thought Marcus did a great job of that today, you know, and he picked his spots. He wasn't, you know, trying to be another Marcus that everyone can't stand sometimes, right? Where he's just like, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, make things better from shooting or by being aggressive and taking over the game. And he didn't do that. So I thought that went a long way for this team, of course. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you in the sense that this Celtics team, I think you said it earlier in the season. It's like they're learning how to win games throughout the course of the season. And that was cute for like a month. But now when we're talking, you know, 42 plus games in, it's like, yeah, like Sherrod said, you shouldn't be, you know, ecstatic about this win. If I'm them, I'm thinking if I'm smart, we should have crushed this team by 20 points, you know, and you have to approach a team like the Magic like that, because back-to-back games against the Milwaukee Bucks, you don't come correct, they will put you in your place real quick. And then again, we're back at, you know, well, where is this team going to go from here? That's why I was a little concerned that we didn't see a lot more assists from Tatum and Brown. Okay, yeah, we got to win. But again, I think they have to find new ways or better ways of making their teammates better. Them, on their own. Maybe not just by Marcus Smart's, you know, demeanor, but you know, when the shots aren't falling, what's going to happen? When Brown aren't making 17 three-pointers or combining for 17 three-pointers, what happens then?
These are hollow victories in that regard for me because, again, I hate playing the make-miss league thing, but that's a big issue is, you know, it wasn't a big points in the paint game. They only got to the free throw line. They had 28 points in the paint. They got to the free throw line 9 times. They made all 9, which is great. But that's not – you know, these wins are not sustainable. Again, if you make, and again, I mean, you don't even have to shrink it down too far. If you just make a few fewer threes or shoot closer to your season percentage, you're in a friggin' dogfight again with the Magic, you know?
Yeah, and exactly. The one thing that they did, they got away from, which bothered the hell out of me, was that when you talk about points in the paint, to me, I'm not as concerned about you getting points in the paint. I do need you to put the ball in the paint, whether it's a guy driving in the paint, kicking, a guy driving the paint looking to score, doing something to loosen that defense up.
Yeah, using the paint on the perimeter. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that for me is the maddening part about this team sometimes, because they were doing that during that stretch when they were just absolutely blowing the doors off the Magic. And then they said, well, since we're knocking down these shots after we, you know, get the ball in the paint, forget that. Let's just skip the middleman. We're not going to get the ball in the paint. We're just going to jack threes because we're feeling it tonight. And again, it worked tonight. But as John pointed out, you cannot live and die by that, because guess what?
Yeah.
When we start breaking down your team, we are going to be doing more autopsies than biopsies. You will be dead if you're going to live and die by the three ball without looking to get it into the paint first and kick it out, or looking to finish it at the rim.
Yep.
Hashtag no autopsies.
Well, no, we look at that. You look at the composition of this team, and that's what you get, especially with how I opened the show with the starting lineup. It's all jump shooters, even Tice to some degree, short row jumpers and three-point jumpers.
The problem is it's a team that relies on outside shooting that actually isn't an outstanding shooting team, and that's the problem. It's like that's the thing that doesn't make sense with the Celtics.
It's like what Sherrod said Friday. You know, they're not the Warriors. They're not the Warriors.
Right.
Yeah. They're upper tier, though. It's what they have to rely on. I mean, who on this team's an elite driver, elite finisher, paint touches? They don't have that stuff.
Jay King for The Athletic wrote it earlier this week, just talking about overall, like, their three-point attempts are way down, and they're near the bottom of the league and down from what they've been.
They need more. People won't believe it, but they need more.
You've got the Nick Gelso sitting at home screaming, the NBA's ruined, too many threes. But, like, the reality is, in today's NBA, they actually do need to jack more threes.
Yeah, and Brad's talked about that. He says they keep talking about their shot composition because it's not very good. They have a ton of twos.
Well, to put that,
if you're going to compare with the three versus the contested two, it's not even close. Shoot the three. Right. I don't care what. Yeah.
Exactly. When you put it in the context, it makes a lot more sense, because when you're a team like the Celtics, like we just said, that's afraid to even put their tippy toe into the paint, then of course you're going to put yourself in a tough spot when you're not taking enough threes and you're not forcing the issue to try to, get high percentage looks inside the paint or anywhere near it.
Well, yeah, how many guys go hard? Even Tatum, when he goes, it's still a little cutesy around the rim. Jalen, there's a little bit of a wiggle, whatever. You do want to see a little bit more just go,
Jalen's gotten better.
Jalen's gotten a little better, but you really do have to sometimes just put your head down and go.
You know who they're missing in that regard?
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson. Believe it or not, John.
Get out of here.
Believe it or not, he'll take it in there, give a few bumps.
He looks like Darren Ravel playing basketball when he tries to drive to the lane, just sitting there.
But he's giving it that effort, John, and that's what you want to see.
I almost asked you who. I almost who?
It's the NBA, Bobby, we don't reward effort, okay?
This is not a participation league, Bobby.
It's not a participation league.
We don't do that. That's not what we're about.
We don't do
Tristan
that.
Thompson will be great on my Y League with that effort.
I'm all for that.
I'm just saying his impact's been a little bit missed. I'm not saying he's been absolutely a huge hole on this team, but they've missed him a little bit this last week or so.
Oh,
well, I've seen a little bit more Time Lord in his place, and I got to be honest, I don't miss him that much.
of course.
I really don't.
And you know what?
Not about him.
It's possible he's played his last game in green, given this COVID outlook and given the deadline on Thursday. So you might, if that's what you want to see, I think it's a possibility.
Now, I will say this about Tristan Thompson. When the Celtics were on that stretch where they'd won like four in a row, four out of five, and things like that, Tristan was one of the better offensive rebounders percentage-wise in the NBA. I think he might have been tops in that four-game stretch where they won four in a row. But here's my thing about Tristan Thompson. It's great that you have a specific skill that, when they're winning, works. But to me, he is a very prime example of what the problem with this team is: inconsistency. There are things that you have been brought in to do, and when you do them well, the team does well. But you don't do them well enough, consistently enough. And when you look at what he's doing, and you look at what Rob Williams is doing in a much more limited capacity, I don't miss Tristan. I really don't. I really don't.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I think he's been a solid player for the team this year, but he's at a position that's filled with talent, as you say, Sherrod. Rob's playing great. Tice is playing great. So you don't necessarily need him, but I think he's done an all right job in his role this year.
He's been dead average and totally replaceable. And if he was never here, I don't think they would have missed him. And
well, you're right in the sense, John. You're right in the sense that they do need to swap him out at this point for a different skill set because they have holes in other places that need to be filled, facilitation, wing, shooting. And so if he's gone, I'm not going to cry. But I mean, I think he gave it a decent effort this year.
Participation trophy, I will make sure he gets one before he leaves without question. But here's my thing. The two guys that he shares a position with, they bring something that is uniquely special that this team needs. And his athleticism, his youth, the fact that he can block shots. The fact that Rob, he's a better offensive threat when he's on the floor than Tristan. And then you got Daniel Tice, who can actually stretch the floor a little bit. He's shooting around like high 30s percentage-wise from three-point range. Yeah. So when I look at what those two guys bring to the table and then I look at Tristan, okay, he's probably a better rebounder than Tice, but he's not really giving me everything that Rob is giving, but he doesn't stretch the floor like Tice. What he brings to the table is replaceable.
Yep.
You don't even have to go outside your roster to replace what he does. If you take Tice out of the mix, you have no one that can stretch the floor at that position. You take Rob out of the mix, you have no one with that type of athleticism in the middle. Tristan, pretty much everything he does well, I can get rid of and be okay.
You get rid of Tice, Grant will get nervous real quick.
Two things I promised I would do. I promised I would get Bobby and Sherrod off in time to watch the end of the Syracuse game.
It's halftime now. We're up by six.
Okay, and we do want to get to the trade rumors. However, every time Jaylen Brown has a good game and we don't spend time on Jaylen, people get mad. So Jaylen Brown had a good game. Let's spend some time on Jaylen, okay?
Oh, you're going to do it like that?
Shots went down. And that's what you want to see. And I got no problem with that. I'm not making an issue. It's just it's one of those games where he shot a friggin' ton of threes, and thankfully they went in. What else did you like from Jaylen's game?
Well,
beyond historic amount of threes.
Say this. There's still that elite-level upside with him, and some people thought that this early portion of the season from him was fluky, that he kind of regressed back to what he is, and you saw that from a two-point percentage. You've said it all season, John, that what he was doing early this year from deep two, mid-range, was as good as anybody's ever started a season from that spot on the floor. So that was going to come back to earth a little bit, but the three-point shot is fantastic with him. Great base, movement off the ball tonight. This was almost like one of his playoff games last year where he had to be an elite player off the ball, and he's not getting as much touches on it now, and he made the most of it in a game like this.
Yeah, and I thought a lot of what he did tonight, or today, I should say, actually came in the flow of the offense. I didn't feel he forced a ton of shots. He did once he got cooking a little bit. He definitely jacked some threes he should not have been jacking, but he was feeling it. The thing that I like about Jaylen is that the more we see him play, the more we see him grow, the clearer it becomes that when you talk about the future of the NBA, particularly when you talk about two-way players, there is no two-way player in the game that has as much upside at this point as Jaylen Brown. To me, he's a guy that has already proven himself to be an all-star, and yet there's still several levels that he still can get better at.
I'm close to taking that two-way moniker away from him until he starts playing better defense.
He was good today defensively.
Better today.
Block and then the third man.
When they go to Milwaukee, he'll impress
you. He's got to earn that two-way tag.
He's saving that for the Milwaukee trip. But, yeah, you know, that third quarter went a long way. I don't know if without Jaylen catching fire the way he did, this thing would have went down to the wire. It would have been a nail biter and flip a coin, and that's who wins it. You know, that's been the case with the Celtics team. Doesn't matter who they're playing against. So, obviously, what Jaylen did went a long way, especially in that third quarter. I like it better when Jaylen has a better view of the way the defense is approaching him. And I think he had that going today for sure. A lot of the times I feel like he puts blinders on. And you know what? I don't mind it a lot of the time when he's in attack mode, but sometimes when he's trying to dribble through three defenders and he's trying to find, you know, kick the ball out with only 2 seconds left on the shot clock, that's what drives me crazy. That's how you get blown out against the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, like that, those sort of turnovers, sloppy plays, that'll get them going real quick on the other end in transition. So I just don't want to see that again. I'm looking at these games and I'm thinking about Milwaukee at the same time. I'm you know, looking at their approach to these teams. And I'm like, man, if they do that against Milwaukee, like that's been my ongoing thing right now for this game and, of course, for tomorrow night and this back-to-back.
It's going to be a big series.
It's a big series. It really is. And now this back-to-back stretch is a good way to sort of get – you know what? I shouldn't even say that. It's not a good way to gauge where the Celtics are at, but it's a good way to compare what you should do against the Bucks and what you cannot do against the Bucks.
Yeah, no, these five games in 7 nights, I think it is, are going to determine this season, where they look seed-wise, what direction they're going to take as a team, and then, of course, the trade deadline. I don't think the next three or so games left are going to, you know, signal to Danny, we're making a trade. If we win them all, we're not doing it. If we don't win it, I think it's going to be judged largely by what's out there and the price and all that stuff. But
second Bucks game, they might miss some players.
I think after the two Milwaukee games, there'll be sellers, and Brad will be boarding a plane to Bloomington.
Still on that, John? No,
you and Brad.
No, I
told you, John, there was a better chance of Barnes having a press conference that he's a Celtic than Brad having one that he was Indiana on Friday.
I still think it's not decided. Anyway, let's get to the trade rumors, okay? This is mainly from KOC here coming out on the Ringer. Is that right, Bobby?
Yep.
So everyone, so the names everyone's looking at now. Was coming in. John Collins as well. John is in play as well. What's interesting, both Collins and Gordon, and it feels like Barnes, the asking price seems to be the same exact thing, which is a good young player and a draft pick and a first round pick. The problem with the Celtics is they don't have a good young player.
They have one, Rob Williams.
And now one of these reports has them, they tried to dish Collins to the Wolves for a first round pick and Malik Beasley, and the Wolves said no. So, you know, it's lesser than Malik Beasley, but seems to be greater than Aaron Nesmith. So, you know, here's the problem here. If the Celtics don't have a young player, are they in play for any of these guys? And if so, does it have to be Rob or multiple firsts? And that's kind of, I think, where we're at here.
Well, yeah, the problem with multiple firsts is that if they're coming from Boston, because right now they have all their own picks, they're going to be at best late teens, but most likely in the 20s. And that gets you Grant Williams. That gets you, okay. Which to me, those two guys are an example of the feast or famine potential with late first round picks. So if you're giving up a guy of significant stature, you're not going to roll the dice on something like that. You want something that's a little more proven in terms of players. And Rob Williams is the only asset they have that's in that 25 and under range that teams want. And they're not parting with Rob Williams unless you're talking about some, you know, an Anthony Davis. Not even Vucevic, I don't think, even would be enough to convince Boston to do that deal. Vucevic looked mighty average against when he was guarded by Tice tonight, by the way. He still put up good numbers, but man, he was not the dominant player I thought he would be.
No, he didn't.
Tice had him flustered. Tice was like, what, you guys want to trade for this guy? I'll take care of this dude right now.
Yeah, Gordon, after a 38-point game, had an absolute dog shit game.
Yeah, he did.
Well, it always depends which team you're working with, too. The Magic in particular, Rob would probably be enticing for them, but they're moving into the future with Vucevic. He's their center. Rob's going to be backing him up if he ends up there. Maybe they have more of a stomach for a wing-style player, Pritchard at the point guard spot, that kind of stuff. And then I think if you do kick out these picks enough into the future, throw enough into the bowl here, and we've seen this again and again with trades that have happened, if you throw 2, 3, maybe even 4 future first-round picks, that gets teams moving. And again, John, it's not so much the player. This is their last opportunity to add a core piece to the roster. They don't have cap space into the future. They don't have young players, assets, that kind of stuff.
They're going to give 4 first-round picks for a player of that caliber.
Well, you got to get this done somehow. And ultimately, it's going to be a high price.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So you do Rob then. You do Rob then. Like, there's only 2 or 3 ways to do this. And Rob's going to be tough to swallow.
So you do Rob and a pick for John Collins. Do you think that makes you better?
I think so. I think it does.
You got to be pretty sure.
See, that's the thing. I disagree. Exactly. You just.
I don't know if it makes you better today. Let alone.
I disagree with that because if I'm Danny Ainge, I'm like, is that going to get us to the NBA Finals? You know, and if you're not sure, if you can't answer that question, then you don't do it. Not to mention the fact that Rob hasn't even reached his ceiling, nowhere near his ceiling yet, or at least I should put it this way, nowhere near the peak where you should sell. You know, you can get someone of a better name than that. Honestly.
Well, the other thing too that you gotta keep in mind, and Danny has talked about this, is that they're not going to trade for a guy that they don't believe, for a young guy that they don't believe they can keep in the fold long term. And John Collins has put everyone on notice that if you want me, you better come with max money.
Money.
And right. Danny is looking at his roster saying, well, I got Tatum on max. I got, you know, Jalen near max. Kemba is max. John Collins? No, bro. You good. You nice. Right. But that's not happening.
That's everyone's problem here with Collins. Is he worth – he's going to get the Jalen deal. Is he worth that deal, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's what I hope isn't the issue. I hope that all this – pushing into the future, kicking it down the curve, that kind of stuff isn't just about money and the tax this year and the tax next year.
No, it's about putting a team together that can win a title. And I don't think that adding John Collins is necessarily going to put you all of a sudden in that Brooklyn, Philly, Milwaukee conversation.
Yeah. If you want to give a couple of firsts, because that's what it's going to take, because you don't have
the first is so useless to me. Throw three, four out the window. I mean,
well, that's, you're just not going to. Those that you need to replenish lottery tickets, downing in young talent when you can't afford other people. You need something. Plus, they're still
when Brown and Tatum are gone.
I'm saying you can't do much else there. You can't trade too many in the future unless it's for a stud. So you got to be really careful throwing four picks at somebody for an okay wing player that's maybe going to start or be your sixth man. That's not good business. But if they can convince a team to trade. The situations with Collins and Barnes or Barnes and Gordon are different. Barnes and Gordon have very team-friendly deals for 2 years, and then you can decide if you want to extend them if they're working for you. Beyond that, you hold their rights. You have the contracts. They're movable. Those are great assets. I'd be willing.
Well, that's a good thing about Gordon. You could match his contract.
Collins makes no sense to me. None. Because
and I love him as a player. I just wouldn't make a deal for him.
Yeah.
I think he makes sense from the standpoint that you – well, that's the thing about Collins, too, is you actually would match his contract. They use the Cantor TP because he's making $5 million right now. So both of those situations leave the TP out to the summer. The problem, as you say, with Collins is he would effectively fill that salary with the extension that would come during the offseason. But as a restricted guy, you essentially get to keep him. You just have to know going in that that's what you're going to be paying him. So why are the Celtics interested if that's – something you know going in, if you're going to acquire him, you have to pay him that level of money, then they obviously are interested in acquiring him.
They may love him. They may really like something. But
I just think, and I'd hate giving up Rob for him, but I think he's more consistent, reliable. He still has upside, and he plays a more important position on the court.
I'll ask you this. Celtics have played the Hawks a couple of times this year. Okay, who stood out more? Just if you were watching basketball for the first time, who's made more of an impression in the games, Rob Williams or John Collins? I can't remember a thing John Collins did.
Well, you're alluding to the second game where he had 0 points in the first half.
That was the game where
game he was solid. He was hitting threes. He was spacing.
Like I said, you have these guys that every once in a while they flash. Then you watch Aaron Gordon tonight, and you're like, you know. Yeah. You get geeked up for a minute, and then you're like, they're good, they're okay. They're good, they're not great. You know, like
that's the thing, John. That's how people feel about – I think that's how teams feel about Rob. They're like, wait, let me see this thing through. Yeah, he's intriguing. Don't get me wrong. There's still some capital there. There's still some value there in the market heading into this week. Obviously, here we're 4 days away or 5 days away. But I just – if you're Danny, I'm not cashing that card in until I can get – I max it out, you know. I max out that value, and I don't think they're there yet. I don't think they're anywhere near there.
Yeah. So what about the Bogdan rumors, Bobby? What are we hearing there?
Well, that's a way to make it bigger. He would tap into the TP a little bit. So you'd be acquiring multiple players to help the team at multiple spots of need this year. The thing is, he's hurt. He's been recovering from knee injury all year, and who knows how he's going to come back off that. So Atlanta probably doesn't love all the money they spent this offseason, and then the consideration with Collins is money they'd have to stack on top of that. So this would be clearing the deck a little bit. And the tough part about this for the Celtics is that's even more long-term money there that wouldn't expire at the offseason, that Kemba would be coming up, and some of the other money that comes up around that time does. So you'd essentially just be eating some of Atlanta's salary here that's gone a little too high for their liking.
Really messed up their offseason. Yeah.
Well, yeah. the problem that the Hawks have right now is that they went into the offseason, this past offseason, looking to bolster the roster with big-name additions that could get them into the playoffs. And then they came out the gates and they sucked. Got rid of the coach, Nate McMillan is running the show. Haven't lost a game since Nate took over. So now all the guys that they were having conversations with about possibly moving, their asking price obviously has gone up because everyone they're playing better. So now it's like they're in a tough spot because they can't really do the kind of deals they would have done if they were like the 14th best team in the East. Now you're like seventh or sixth. So if you're going to give up a piece and risk potentially not getting to the playoffs or hurting your team in the short term, you got to get some assets. You got to get more than frankly you're giving away. And to Bobby's point, teams are probably going to have to give them three or four picks to get John Collins. Even if those picks suck, even if those picks are like second rounders that are unprotected or some type of you know mechanisms by which they can get assets, whether they can maybe have the option of flipping picks.
Yep.
They have to get something that is bigger, grander, and greater than what you could have got done with them like maybe 3-4 weeks ago.
Well, here's a good thing too.
So true. You know what? Don't you feel like, Sherrod, I feel like Ainge sort of like put down the blueprint and everyone's like, oh, okay, that's how you do it with the future draft. You know,
he's getting a taste of his own medicine. There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. And then Houston took a page out of that. You know, other teams out in Washington, like that's the thing. And then now it's like when he's the one calling, it's like, oh, wait a minute, Danny, you know what we want. You know what it's going to take. Like be real.
Don't
now.
Get me wrong. We've seen the risks of doing it. Houston's in an awful spot. Houston has had to lose 20 games because their picks go in Oklahoma City if they don't. Mm-hmm. If they don't go to the bottom of the league because of that awful Russell Westbrook trade. So you can end up looking stupid pretty fast, giving up multiple first-round picks. But it's either or, John. You know, you're probably not getting a deal done right now if you're not putting it on the table.
You just don't dig into your pocket for four picks unless you're getting a slam dunk player in return, or you think you are. Obviously, anything can blow up in your face with injuries or somebody not performing to expectation, but you're doing it for a high level player, not a Band-Aid. Okay, and that's where we're at here.
Or a young player that you're gonna have for years to come could flip
like
down
I said,
the line.
I would roll the dice potentially for like not. Four, I don't know, four picks, but I would up the price for a Lonzo Ball type player, okay? Like,
oh, here we go. Damn it, John.
Well, no, I mean, like I said, the reason Lonzo is because young, you could build him around him as part of your core. You could decide to lock him up and pay him in the offseason. New Orleans is in a tough spot. You're going to make your big three core. If you can only pay three guys real money, it's going to be Zion, Ingram, and is Lonzo going to be one of those guys? Are you locking him up long term? I don't know that they necessarily want to do that because they're losing with this group right now. So I know, like, and again, KOC mentioned it in this piece here, they're in a tough spot because they're afraid they could either lose him for nothing in the offseason to an offer sheet or be forced to pay him more than they want to pay him, and they don't know what to do. So they're in a bit of a crisis sort of situation here. I'd be more interested in that personally than in terms of giving up assets and locking a guy up long term. I'd be more interested in Lonzo than John Collins, but that's just me.
I just think New Orleans is going to try that situation lightly. They're going to try lightly on that. I mean, obviously, that's a big piece.
They're going to freeze and be paralyzed, and then the offseason is going to happen to them, and whatever happens, happens. I think they're just going to balk.
That's the spot Atlanta's in, too.
After what happened with Jrue Holiday, you know, I think they're going to be a little more careful, no? I just, listen, the way you feel about him, that's how I feel about Harrison Barnes. Like if it's not Harrison Barnes, then I don't want it. Yeah, man, Harrison Barnes, listen, whether we're talking –
looks like he's off the table now.
I know, right. Well, that's long gone now, but again – to what you said, John, addressing a point, addressing a position in the roster that they need help in, addressing the wing position.
So
whether it's defending,
but you know,
whether it's 3-point shooting, whether it's facing.
Here's why Lonzo makes more sense from the Celtics standpoint. Danny always talks about making moves for both the short and long term. Lonzo helps you from day one. Because one of your problems is ball movement. Guess what? Lonzo is one of the best ball movers among young guys in the league. So that helps you short term. Long term, his three-point shooting, his perimeter game is getting better. He physically is going to get stronger. He is going to be your future point guard once Kimba's off that max contract. And he'll be, what, 25 maybe or something like that? And so to me, if I'm going to overpay for a guy, I'm going to do it for that guy because he has a clear role. John, but the problem with Harrison Barnes, he's a Band-Aid. Harrison Barnes has no long-term future in Boston if you were to bring him in. And the assets that you have to give up are going to hurt you dramatically down the road when you are going to be needing to fill the back end of your roster,
right?
Because you're going to have all these max contract guys. So
the thinking with the thinking that Barnes
is a realistic option right now. It may in the future, maybe, but right now, like the Pelicans, they're not going to let that guy go right now. They got to be careful.
But you might take on a bad contract.
They saw what happened with Drew.
You may bail them out of something. You may give them first-round picks. You take off a contract using the TPE off their hands, like a Redick or something. Like, you could do Redick, things there. You could
bring
do things,
him. You, bring him.
But you could do things. Yeah, work. And that wouldn't kill you either. So you might be able to give them some relief where they need it. I don't know if it's doable. All I'm saying is I would like for the Celtics.
Maybe the offseason.
Don't freak out and say, I need something to kind of just a little Band-Aid or a little salve to fix something that's ailing me now that isn't part of my long-term future. I don't do that. I would rather pay a premium price for something that you think you actually want and then hold on to it for longer. And I think Lonzo fits into that piece. So that's why I'd be willing to give more there to make that happen than any of the other guys who I think will be okay.
That's another one that's got to happen now. Off season, sign and trade. This team just isn't in a cap position to make those kind of deals.
Have to happen now.
Yeah, and so this is why Ainge isn't dumb. He's got Zarin in his ear talking about the books and what can happen now versus what can happen later. And they've talked a lot about standing pat and being comfortable with the situation they're in. I'm not buying it. Like later, it's going to be much harder later to do the kind of things they want.
Would you be smart? Would you put smart in there for Lonzo? We've talked about that before too.
I was thinking maybe even Kemba, you know, like
it's, would.
Yeah. Kemba you can't do because the point is they don't want to spend this money. So they're not going to eat 2 more years of Kemba. By the way, thank goodness I didn't do a Kemba apology camp because he's back to early season Kemba the last 6 games.
I told you to wait a week or two.
Yeah.
That was good.
I love Kemba.
I was shocked you brought
I just don't like the way he's playing. I love him. I just don't like his play.
Yeah, I'm the same guy. Yeah.
If this is all about participation awards and trophies like that, Kemba's like my MVP.
Yeah. I love Kemba. Yeah.
Right? He came back early.
I love Kemba. I can tell you now, Marcus Smart would absolutely devastate me if you put him in a deal for Lonzo. It would devastate the hell out of me. Now, would I do it? I think I just might.
Yeah,
I think I just might.
That's the epitome of now and later.
Because if you think you're not going to re-sign Smart and you push your chip, if you think you're not going to re-sign him in his next deal, you cut bait a year early and you push your chips in on Lonzo and say, I'm going to pay this guy.
That would hurt me so bad.
It would hurt.
Damn, I would do it.
Those two paired together. Like I would like that too.
I've tossed around Smart for Collins too. I mean, I think Smart's a guy you have to consider right now because of the contract.
You know what I would fear, though, if I'm the Celtics?
My
fear in moving Marcus was that he would be Tony Allen 2.0. Remember how Tony went to Memphis, and all of a sudden, they became a completely – he literally changed everything about that organization. They were not grind. They were just god-awful bad before he got there, and all of a sudden, they've got this new identity. Marcus could do that with New Orleans, and you're pairing him with Brandon and Zion? Oh, my God. LeBron is thinking like, Boston, don't do that. Boston, don't do that. I will give back some of my Boston Red Sox ownership if you don't do that deal. Don't let Marcus Smart go to New Orleans because then they become a problem. Yeah. They become a big problem. And if you're the Celtics, guess what? Lonzo helps you become a problem out east.
This is a potentially mutually beneficial sort of situation. But again, you got to start.
It hurts me.
Every time you talk about a trade, what Celtics fans and we have too often done in this room is it has to hurt a little, you know? So
this hurts.
It has to hurt a little. Every trade's got to hurt a little. So if you're really starting to love Rob, like I do, watching him go is going to hurt a little bit. And it's the same thing for Marcus Smart.
And if you love Marcus as long as I have, and still do.
Yeah,
I'm feeling a
pain. Or the Jaylen Brown people. If Jaylen Brown,
you put Rob in this deal too, in this proposed deal, John. Wait a minute.
I'm saying any deal. Look, I'm saying any deal has to hurt a little, which means it's got to be Rob or it's got to be Smart, or I don't know who else. Because honestly, there's no other player on this team.
Right.
Reach down and say,
get Smart away.
We have to keep reminding Celtics fans of that constantly, right? Every single night, where every time we do this show, we have to remind them that every team in the NBA isn't trying to make the Celtics better, right?
Yes.
They want to make themselves better, okay? That's the point.
You know what else
the whole, That's the whole point.
Just wait. Also, they've all got DVRs and scouting departments, and every single one of them watched all 13 of Aaron Nesmith's minutes tonight and said, no effing way, you know? Okay? They all watched
him. Yeah, yeah, some of the fans are like, well, why don't they trade him already? Why doesn't anyone want him? I don't get it.
Good. Just give him Nesmith. Nobody wants
Nesmith and three first. Get it done.
Teams loving those first, though. You keep seeing those ask for it.
It's a lottery ticket. Get one. Just hit one of them's got to hit, right?
The smart ball one's tricky.
How many 14 picks in a row could you blow? You think if they had the 14 pick the next 2 years, they'd be as bad as these guys?
Hey, you want to find out, it seems like.
Averages. One of them's got to be Halliburton, right?
Oh, don't man, that 13th. One hurt on Friday.
Oh, everyone, all the Giannis people come out real quick. Don't take the 13th pick. Oh,
Halliburton has two finishes over the weekend where I was just jaw dropped. That guy is special. But I the smart ball one's tough for me. I think that is such a significant drop off right now in terms of what the Celtics need.
The best thing about that trade is you don't use the TPE and you can still use it again. So, like, anytime you can make a trade to get a piece for the future and still possibly swing the TPE into something is interesting, okay?
So would you rather trade Rob or Smart?
It depends for whom.
Smart.
Yeah. It always for me, it depends on who I'm getting back in return.
Yeah, in this,
it has to be Smart.
Ball, I guess in this situation, it's Rob for Collins and Collins, Smart for Ball.
Probably Rob, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure I do because I don't know if I like Collins enough.
I think I'd rather keep Smart.
Yeah, I think it's I'd rather keep. If Rob's I've got just, Collins, Rob on one end, and I've got Smart, Lonzo on the other, I think I want to keep Marcus and bring John in.
I mean, this is the thing about Rob, John. I know you love his potential, and everybody in the Celtics world does. Reliability, consistency, stability with injuries. All that stuff I look at with Rob, even today, bad game fouling. Defensively, he wasn't always there. He had a few flashy plays, but do we know he's going to come together as the fully formed, actualized player? We're still a long way from that, I think. And with big men, it can take a while. And guess what? This offseason, they have to decide, are you going to extend Robert Williams? And I still think you're in a spot with him where you say, do I? Don't I? Let another team decide. No, you do if you're keeping him.
Yeah, if you're keeping him, you absolutely do that. And I'm pretty sure you're gonna try to make that happen. You are going to try to make that happen. But, man – I don't want to lose Smart. I mean, I really don't want to lose
a lot. It would.
Just for obvious reasons with his defense, but to me, I mean, he brings it. He brings it every night. And even when he plays like crap, you don't feel as though he's dogging it. You don't feel like he's giving you less than his best. And I can't say that about a lot of these guys because Tatum can get you 25 points like that. And you are pretty damn sure he wasn't his best version, as John would like to say, the best version of himself in that game. I don't feel that about Marcus. Marcus can go 3 for 19 and have the best game of his life because he'll make a diving save, he'll force a turnover, he'll contest a shot that the other team needed to make and they won't because he contested it. He does all those intangible things that I love.
What he's done in the playoffs too.
But what, Sherrod? But what?
But a chance to get Lonzo.
You really love Lonzo that much, huh?
I love Lonzo for what he is now and what he can become.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of what Danny would think about it. Because if it's just me personally, I'm not moving Marcus Smart because I love Marcus Smart to death. But if I'm trying to think the way Danny thinks, Danny's always looking at that short-term, long-term benefits and guys that can help him at both ends of that spectrum. And Lonzo is that kind of player.
And again, it's it's tough. And Smart
hurt.
You're right. One of two things will happen. Smart will go somewhere else, and it'll be like instantly you'll realize, like, oh God, we just
Tony Allen all over again. Just
rip the heart out of our chest, and like, oh my God.
Especially with the Pelicans. Or, that's someone trying to build something.
Or, and nobody wants to hear this, he goes somewhere else and be like, wow, we might have vastly overrated his impact. You know, it's like, I don't know which one it's going to be because Smart, like I said, it's Smart's that guy.
Evan Turner. What happened, Evan?
The true value of the player. Is in all the intangible stuff that you like that we all think exists because we've watched enough of this team over the years to know, and they all say it too. The players say it. He's our heart and soul. But it's always is it just Is it something that we've created and fabricated in Celtics Nation to be a bigger, more significant thing than it actually is?
I don't think it is.
Or we've underrated it, and it's the most important thing, and trading it would be an absolute disaster. It's a real dice roll. That first
question you asked is about what he's done. And there is no doubt about he's been the heart and soul of the team, and he's done substantial things for this team year in and year out. The question you have to ask.
And underrated. Obviously, he's such a polarizing player.
I think his track record to this point has proven what he is, which is all defense, great passer, clutch shooter, all that stuff. The question you're asking, if you're going to move him, is what's it going to be in 3 to 4 years? And he's piled up injuries over the years. He's gotten up there minutes-wise, all that kind of stuff. And he's the kind of player you ask, are you going to invest $20 million plus? Because they got him on a cheaper deal.
He's not getting $20 million, by the way.
That's what he's going to be looking for after that cheaper first deal.
Right. I'm looking for $20 million also.
So it sounds like John's shipping him out.
No, I'm saying I think a lot of people in the comments have said Smart's going to be looking for 20 on that next deal. I don't think Smart gets 20 on the next deal. At the end of the day, everyone else outside of Boston sees a player who scores about 10, 11 points a game, shoots sub 40%, plays pretty good defense, but is not a terrific on-ball defender, and you're paying for intangibles. Teams do not give $20 million for intangibles. They don't do it.
Especially shooting.
Don't do it in a league where you need shooters. Yeah. Right. You do not pay 20-something million dollars for intangibles. You don't do it. So I don't believe
Smart. J.J. Redick got almost 20 not too long ago because he could shoot. That's yes. Why.
Yeah. Smart will never get that on the open market. Never. I feel strongly about that because he is a guy that you absolutely want to have and makes you better, but he's a bit of a luxury item when you're talking about Where am I going to put my chips? Where am I going to place my money? Yeah. You have limited amount of money to spend. I do not believe a team goes out and throws 20-something million dollars at Marcus Smart. They don't. Especially a guy who probably might be a sixth man. You know, this is a guy who's going to – it's not.
How much does Al Horford make?
If he were free right now in the open market, he might be.
No, I'm saying how much did he make? You never know when you get into these off seasons.
I mean, Al Horford is significantly better than Marcus Smart.
Bob. Al Horford is a stretch four who can defend centers and shoot
three. Significantly better than Marcus.
Yeah, he's a different guy, you know.
Right.
But I don't know, Sherrod. You look upset.
I know. What you got?
First of all, I'm internally struggling with the concept of moving Marcus Smart because I love Marcus Smart to death. So there's that battle. But I'm thinking about your question, John, and you're right. Marcus brings intangibles, that's really what his forte is.
Right.
But if you're talking about like just pure basketball, I mean, remember, Marcus Smart, he's one of like the top five, top six all-time three-point shot makers in Celtics history. His assist numbers have gone up each of like the last 3 years. He's actually getting better in the stuff that we actually care about, like facilitating, rebounding, and you're getting that improvement with all of the intangibles that you know you're going to get. So it's not a stretch for him to get $20 million a year. I would be a little bit surprised. I think Marcus will probably get something in the high teens that will average out to about 17, 18, 19 million a year. 20, it might be a little bit of a stretch, but shit, at that point,
what's
a couple million dollars?
Right. What's the difference?
He's a career 37% field goal shooter, 31% from three. And granted, 2 years ago, I think that outlier season where he shot 36 threw people off thinking he was trending. So if you're like, oh, if he shoots 36, 37, 38, that's good. Dips last year to 35.
That was a couple years ago.
He's 33% this year, okay? It's a guy who averages about 4 or 5 assists per game, 10 points per game for his life. Those stats alone are not $20-something million. You have to believe that you are paying for somebody whose mere presence is absolutely going to elevate you to another level. I really do think, again, outside of Boston, in Boston, we may overvalue or value appropriately, but I do not believe he has that same value to other teams that haven't had the full Marcus Smart experience because
obviously the all NBA defense is a lot to say about that, right? I mean, that's what gets you 15 plus, right? I'm with you, Sherrod. Somewhere, I don't know, 17, 18 million to probably average out. Maybe it tops out one of those years, 19.5, but I think on average it'll be around there.
And again, that's the reason why he will get that much, because
you need shooters, man. I don't think so, but yeah.
The resume will get you $15 million. He'll this year. We'll see, but obviously he's made a couple of All NBA first teams, you know. So yeah. that's significant, I think. And of course, you know, deep playoff appearances, you know, deep runs, deep playoff runs, all that experience. Yeah, but 20 might be a little bit too much.
So I don't know, but this is what we're talking about in these trades. It's an interesting thing. He might not even be on the table, and New Orleans might want nothing to do with anything the Celtics offer, nor dealing balls. And that's
the right idea. It's exactly what Sherrard
said. But it's what you're gonna have to do.
Setting yourself up for now and later, because this team continues to expire at a rapid rate. One guy's leaving, next guy's leaving. You get nothing for them, and this TP is another thing on top of that. So you got to get something for it at some point. You just can't let that thing expire.
So let's wrap. Right.
I'm not talking about like getting Tyler Zeller, which is what they did when they had a TPE a few years ago. We need to get a little bit better for TPE game.
Let's put a bow on it. Go around the horn, okay? Of the names being mentioned that you think are possible, pick your guy. Pick your guy and make your realistic trade. Go. We'll start with Bobby. Pick your guy.
Collins has been my guy for a long time.
And what are you trading for it?
I would do Rob. If that's what, like, if they're going to put their foot down, bang the table and say, we want Rob. That's what you have to do to acquire him. You can't get this guy in the offseason. You can't. Yeah. And so it's all about now. How can you beat these other teams now? Because obviously there's five teams interested in him. Wolves said, we're not doing Beasley. So you got to be the team that comes out and pays a fair price for it. Now, would I rather do three first-round picks and Pritchard and Langford and Nesmith and all this stuff and just throw whatever at them? Sure. Especially if you're going to take back Bogdanovich, because what was mentioned here is that if they're trying to get off some money, keep their run rolling here, then maybe you give them some rotation players that can continue that run. Collins is going to be a tough one for Atlanta to swallow, because that will take a bite at their 8-0 run that they're on right now. But Bogdanovich isn't playing, so they can dump him and say, we're still rolling here. And the Celtics, if they give up multiple young players and multiple firsts, add two rotation guys that they can rely on. And Bogdanovich would make a big difference as far as four spacing goes. And Collins is a guy who can play the four and the five. It's just how great of a defender can he be is the question. I just like adding that young guy who still has potential to rise in a different system, because for his whole career, Atlanta's been terrible. They haven't been well coached. He hasn't gotten great development on the defensive end of the floor because they're building around Trae Young. So I just love the idea of him coming in here and becoming a better player in a better system.
All right, Josue, go.
Yeah, I'm going on a limb. I'll be bold here. Bring back Al Horford. F it. Bring him back. Like the bullet for you.
I don't hate it.
Hold on, let me finish.
That's your TP use?
Right?
You might as well go get Tyler Zeller.
Go ahead. Give your rationale.
Bite the bullet for a year. Look to restructure that final year, because I know it's what everyone's thinking about, you know, the end of that contract. That final year is an option. So you restructure that, put yourself in play, and try to get better from there. But, I mean, that's essentially your team for the rest of this season and next year. So I know that's a little scary, but when you think about if you're not giving up a Rob Williams or Marcus Smart, I mean, it's not a bad route if you're able to pull it off. You know, handful of future first, couple of bench options. We talked about the names. You know the names, the Romeos, the Aaron Nesmiths, the
greatest
the
hits,
Green, Grant Williams. Hey, OKC, take your pick out of these four or five. Take it, take the picks, use the exception. You still have a little bit left over, and see what you can do in the offseason. You know, I think also don't forget Al Horford is obviously a good guy to have in the locker room, but you put him back together with Rob Williams. Rob Williams, before the start of this regular season, talked about how Al Horford, his advice, he's not something that people talk about, but it went a long way his rookie season. And he was really looking forward to this season to make that leap. Obviously, he has in some sense. So I think Al Horford had a lot to do with that. Bring him back and put those two together as the new defensive anchors of this team.
So did Tristan.
All right, Sherrod.
Don't.
Okay. I've listened to my good friend Bobby and my good friend Josue.
And your ears are bleeding.
Okay. Let me try to process and just kind of get what is marinated out onto to you. I'm not going to give up on Rob Williams just yet, even for someone like like Collins, because to me, it doesn't make me appreciably better. I have a player in Rob Williams who has skills that when you start going through the entire NBA landscape, no one is that freakishly athletic, that young, who knows my system, who I don't have to worry about whether they can adapt to being in a winning culture, because that's literally all Rob knows. And John Collins, that's literally the one thing he doesn't know. So he's out of the picture. Joe Sway, I love Al Horford. I love Al Horford to death. We even use the same body lotion. I've seen it in his locker. I use the same stuff. We have the same scent. We're like that. But I would not use my TPE on him, because remember, Danny wants short-term, long-term benefits.
Right, right. Hold on, sorry.
Al is for the moment. And here's the thing. Al doesn't help you.
You're throwing in Thompson, too. You're throwing Thompson, so that you're not using a lot of that TPE. But go ahead. Sorry.
Al doesn't help you get any closer to winning a title this year, in my opinion, because you're still going to be behind Brooklyn, at least 2 to 3 teams between Brooklyn, Philly, and Milwaukee. You'll still be behind at least 2 of them. So he doesn't help you there. To me, you have to figure out a way to jumpstart what you have, and you need to do it on the cheap. And so this is my suggestion. And again, you guys are going to cringe when I say this. I want to bring back Isaiah Thomas on a minimum contract. Here's why. Hear me out. If it works the way it potentially could, he can give you that energy, that boost, that whatever the hell you don't have right now that's clearly missing. If it doesn't work, get rid of him. You did it before, and now you can do it even easier than you did before, because at this point, there's not one move that you're going to be able to make at the trade deadline or this offseason that is going to automatically catapult you to where you are right up there with Brooklyn and Philly and those other guys. But you need to do something. Do something that you know has worked. Do something that you know may not work as well now, but damn it, try something. Do not let the trade deadline come and go with the same 15 guys on the roster now. Will be the same 15 guys that you're going to trot out for the rest of the year. Don't do that. Yeah. Do something. And again, IT would be a very minimal money-wise, but his impact could be much grander than that. Do something.
It's going to be a sad day when they let him go again, though, Sherrod. That's
oh, my God.
Really? You know what? I will absolutely – do you remember the Denver Broncos player, Moreno, the gym where he's just right. Running himself? That's going to be me.
He ran for 200-something against the Pats here in one game. But
had Bill crying, I know.
No, they did. They let him do it on purpose because they didn't want Manning to throw. But anyway, for me again, I said Lonzo, but I don't know if he's on the table. But that's the person I would overpay for. If Sacramento's dumb enough to do Neesmith Barnes for Neesmith or Romeo in a draft pick, I would certainly do that as well too. I am reluctant to give up on Rob because I think he's potentially a core player. He may not be, but I know that the other guys aren't either. So I'd rather roll the dice on a potential core player right now. And if you ask most people around the league, when people are talking about Boston, they're basically saying the keepers on the Celtics are the two Jays and Rob at this point. And that just kind of feels to be the vibe. Doesn't mean he's not tradable. I just think it's really got to be the right trade to give up. And I am afraid that none of those other guys do it. So you either get super creative or you trade something that like – big. We're talking smart. I'm not saying trade Jalen. I'm saying you get really big with it and remake the whole team on the fly, building around Jason or whatever. Or you throw in as much as it possibly takes to get the one guy that you really like that's both now, you know, a now and later. And right now, the only name I'm seeing out there is Ball. Gordon, from what I'm reading here, they're talking multiple firsts and multiple players. I don't think the Celtics have enough. I don't think the Celtics have enough in the war chest to get to Gordon. I'm not kidding.
Especially with competition, he looks like a Blazer to me.
Two firsts, Rob and Romeo, doesn't get it done. You know, like I really don't think so. You know, It could be two firsts and a reasonable player. And if the sticking point then becomes Rob versus anyone else, do you guys do two firsts and Rob for Gordon?
No.
Oh,
I do Grant Williams. I do the other Williams.
The problem is, it's not an either or. If you're another team, you're not saying, "Eh."
I'd rather have Collins and Gordon.
One of these three guys, I'm fine.
I'd rather have Collins.
Yeah.
Collins.
Yeah, I'd rather have Collins. Go ahead.
Gordon's got a bit of a broken shot. His offense is a challenge in the shot selection.
I agree.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing for Gordon is that his shot selection would fall into Boston's issues more than improve in Boston. Yeah. He'd be willing to take those spinning jumpers and long twos and all that stuff. And he doesn't trust his three. You saw it at times today. He looks like a Blazer to me. I think they love the defensive wings. I think they could trade Gary Trent for him as a good centerpiece. They have picks to offer, of course, as well. And I think the competition is going to be stiff on him. And Orlando doesn't have to rush to move him, although they'd probably like to. I think what's so great about Ball and Collins is that those teams are kind of under the gun. Are you going to keep them or are you going to risk losing them? Specifically Atlanta, because they want to keep this going, but they know there's a substantial chance that they could lose him and probably will lose him this offseason. So if you want to make that move, you got to do it now. Are you going to be hard capping yourself with a sign and trade later? You're probably going to be getting less in that situation. So I think that's a move that ends up happening, as tough as it would be for Atlanta. Ball, it's the same situation, but is there money out there for Ball this offseason? That's the question everyone's asking, and I think it could go either way. I think there are quite a few deals that they would probably match Ball on. There's a bunch of
teams that'll throw an offer sheet at him for sure.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
All right, so they're going to have to get him moving.
So they got to decide. That's, again, and I believe both Atlanta, as Sherrod mentioned, and New Orleans will be paralyzed by indecision and allow the decision to be made for them, carrying it into the offseason, and then just hope for the best. And they'll just keep kicking that can down the road without a plan. It is really hard to make that plan right in the middle of the season.
That boxes Boston out eventually.
It's hard, but you're right. You got to make that move now because it'll get very competitive in the offseason, I think. So I don't know. Tough call. Anyway, we went around. Guys, catch the last few minutes of the Cuse game.
Damn. It's tied up.
Okay. Is it really?
Yeah. Is it really? 6-0.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to keep you any longer.
Oh, Sherrod, we've got a game.
I'm going to have you on here again.
Sherrod Scary.
Writes for Bleacher Report, Boston Sports Journal. He has the A-List podcast on CLNS Media Network. Another episode dropping Tuesday. Do you have a guest lined up yet?
I do. We will be talking with Sam Amick.
There you go.
Deal.
So you like that?
The season.
Exactly. So you know what we'll be talking about. Pretty much what we're talking about right now. But obviously, you know, Sam, he's been longtime NBA beat writer. We'll be talking about the trade deadline. Obviously, we'll get into the buyout market. We'll talk about the Kings as well, and Barnes specifically, with him having a background, having covered the Kings for a while. We'll be chopping it up with my good friend Sam.
So guys, and again, if you're watching here, we always appreciate having you. So that's great. But you're silly if you're not subscribed to Sherrod's podcast already, because they get real movers and shakers and insiders every single week. It's great inside information. It's great conversation. It's a really fun podcast. So obviously you've got Sam Amick, who's been dropping dropping info left and right on this stuff. So you definitely want to tune into that. And we'll put it out on our YouTube channel as well. Subscribe to our YouTube channels if you haven't already. Josue Pavone, Heavy.com, and the Causeway Street Podcast. Also, I'll see on us Media Network. And Bobby Manning for Celtics Blog, Boston Sports Journal, CLNS Media, and the host of Dome Theory. A podcast you can find on the CLNS Media Network. Thank you guys for hanging around. Another game tomorrow. We may get Jimmy back. Different cast of characters. We'll see. We got a lot more interesting stuff starting in April on the postgame show. We call that a tease in the business. I'm not going to tell you guys exactly what it is, but it's going to involve you guys, the listeners and the fans. And I will tell you all about it as we get a little closer to that date. So, guys, thank you very much for watching.
We'll get crazy.